I'm going to allow Fihari to add some issues on the input that was made, and later then we'll have the reporter to give us more information on the, all those issues that were identified in the input. Welcome, sir. You are in your room.
Good morning, members, colleagues, and visitors. My name is Joseph Kinyiza. I am a researcher on matters relating to fisheries in this committee. My representation will be a little bit broad, but I'll try to squeeze it so that it has to allow me to see or to understand how the sector is structured. Because my members may have been directly involved in the sector, while others are maybe relatively new. I believe most members may have received the written document on email and the hard copy. Okay, the South African fishery sector is one of the fishery sectors that are globally recognized in terms of management and the way it is run, and also to a certain extent the sustainability of the sector. And broadly speaking, it can be divided into marine and inland fisheries, and of which the marine has received more attention in terms of development than the inland. And within those ones, they are further some sub-sectors within them, like the catcher fishery that is famously known or well known. Then there is a newly developing one, which is aquaculture, and to a lesser extent is the culture fishery. The culture fishery is where they do stock enhancement and also ranching. They grow the fish in a hatchery, or the resources in hatchery, then they are released to the wild to be later caught or harvested. But that was relatively more of a pilot. The main focus is on catcher, which is the vessels when they go out at sea to fish, and also the fish farming, which is aquaculture. The catcher fishery has traditionally been divided into the commercial, the recreational sector, as well as subsistence. And the amendment of the Marine Living Resource Act, which is recently been signed into law, it was the subsistence fishing was mostly focused on those who are purely purely living on the resources by harvesting, not selling. So it had a restriction. And in terms of regulations and also development, they are differences and in terms of needs within and between the sub-sector in terms of the framework, the legislation and also regulation. But what is in the case is that the inland fishery has been underdeveloped and nothing much has been focused on them in terms of resources. The sector plays a very important economic role, and there are still plans that this role needs to be sustained and made sustainable going forward. For example, the local family that are depending on directly or indirectly activities related to fishing. The economic, in terms of economic value, there are over 2.5 million recreational fishers in South Africa. This is according to a study that was commissioned by the deep sea angling group. Because they were not set from the department in terms of how is this sector doing. So another study from the private sector came up with this result that in land value terms, it's over 18 billion land. That is in terms of jobs that are there and salaries, and also buying the bait and tackle. Then we find that the implementation today in terms of recording the real value of this, because the department has shortcomings which pertain to policies and under management objectives in terms of that will guide the development of this sector. While on the marine fisheries, the commercial fishery is estimated to be having over 27,000 people directly employed in there. But this figure is not stable because sometimes within one document of the department, 27,000 and around 180 or 33. So there hasn't been proper estimate from the department side. But that is the ballpark figure. Those are the people that are directly involved, and over 100,000 people indirectly involved in this sector, that is in the processing and also the supporting industries around fishing. And in terms of the subsistence of small scale fishing, there are over 7,300 people or fishers that are depending on this in this sector, which is mostly along the coast. In Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and to a lesser extent in KwaZulu-Natal. And those communities, on average, they are about 63% of them are food insecure, which made them to be one of those communities that need attention. And in terms of the freshwater aquaculture, there isn't much information. There isn't much information because when the departments were merged or configured, agriculture, the Department of Agriculture was responsible for inland agriculture, or freshwater agriculture. Then the former Department of Environmental Affairs was responsible for the marine agriculture. So development is parallel, but it was not balanced because there was a different objective. But at the end of the day, the marine aquaculture was more developed in terms of legislation, policies, and also guidelines, while inland aquaculture lagged behind. So after the measure, they had inland aquaculture also had to get more attention in terms of policies and legislation. There isn't a clear number of the workforce in inland aquaculture, but in marine aquaculture, the figures also fluctuating, but it's said to be about between 1,600 and 1,900 people permanently employed, and the industry is worth over 379 million rand annually. And all this sector, if we summarize them saying aquaculture and the capture fisheries, they need constant intervention in terms of research to ensure that they are sustainable. And the other thing being that if aquaculture is promoted, it will relieve pressure from capture fisheries, but there will be another source of fish supply other than depending entirely on harvesting wild caught fish. But then, as much as those are the target. They are also challenged because there is a need for balancing between the social and economic potential of the states and at the same time protecting the integrity of the ecosystem, the marine and coastal ecosystem, because we don't want to reach a stage where there is degradation of the environment where the fish are supposed to thrive. In terms of legislation, the future expected line of must be on two pieces, the Sea Fisheries Act of 1988 and the Marine Living Resources Act of 1998. The Sea Fisheries Act was repealed, so there was some section of that act that I know that there are some new sections that are still in use. Most of them were repealed by the Marine Living Resources Act, which is now more important in terms of the sector, which is the sea fisheries or the marine fisheries. Within the freshwater or the inland fisheries, there isn't a legislation that is to promote fisheries or aquaculture, because these responsibilities, they are the responsibility of development of environmental affairs. So the legislation that most of them still fall under, they are more on resource management and conservation, which means that they are not positioned to promote the use of resources for addressing various challenges like procreation, employment, and also promoting the fishery, but it's more concerned with preservation and also conservation of the resources. Probably that's the reason why it has not grown, like inland aquaculture and inland fisheries has not grown. And some pieces of policies that are important is the general fishing policy, and there are sector specific policies that govern each sector. This is in particular to the marine fisheries, because within there isn't a policy on freshwater or inland fisheries, but it was mooted that it will be developed. It has not been developed yet, so there is still that gap. Most of the work is still focused on marine fisheries. Then there is the small scale fisheries policy, which the committee will need to spend some time on it in terms of its implementation. We'll talk to that at a later stage. And then another overarching policy is the National Development Plan. I've left out a number of other policies because they've already spoken about them. The fishery sector is also affected by those ones, especially in addressing the challenges like job creation, unemployment, inequality, and rural community development. So I will shoot straight to what I think the committee may need to consider. Before I reach to what the committee needs to consider, I just need to briefly inform members that within fisheries there are 22 fishing sectors that are regularly monitored in terms of fishing compliance and also research. And each of those sectors, for example, under a hake being a resource, there is a long line, then there is a hake hand line, then you have a trawl. And those ones, although they are harvesting or they are fishing the one resource being hake, they are recognized as separate sectors because they are managed going to dive into the details of those ones as the community progress or as the time progress. And these fisheries are not only governed by national policies and legislation, they are also governed by international agreements and legislation. For example, because fish is not stationary in one place, sometimes it moves from one country to another. So the management of those resources, if I can make an example with tuna, they can travel a longer distance. We will continue with the members have copies.
You will have copies, all of us?
Yes.
Okay, let's proceed.
Yes. We are on slide number 12, which is page 6. That's the ground then before we go to the issue. And most of the policies, because they are developed such that they contribute towards food security, socio-economic development, and poverty alleviation, right, from all these sectors. And they feed into the national policies, and also not only international policies, but also to other international agreements, because some of the agreements are binding, and each country has to ensure that they implement those agreements. For example, resolutions from the United Nations, of which South Africa is a signatory of. They are binding, so South Africa has to make sure that there are means in place to ensure they are implementation. I'll look to one of those ones as we go, just to give me the background of what's happening. And as most members are aware that there's a drive to implement the National Development Plan. The National Development Plan affects the fishing sector as well. So it will be playing one, will be one of those central activities that the committee may need to look into, more especially ensuring that it's implemented. The National Development Plan in relation to the fishing sector, it promotes the scientific research and also the and ensuring compliance with fishing laws to ensure that they essentially remain sustainable. And of which may be of interest to members that it does recognize the importance of small-scale fisheries, but there are some differences between what the NDP says and what the department believes is the way to go. So those issues can be ironed out with the department when it comes, but especially around the allocation of fishing rights. Because the National Development Plan encourages increasing the number of participants on limited resources, while on the other side, the government wants to spread or increase the number of participants on the resources. That may be seen differently depending on the policies that are looked at. And the reason behind that from the National Development Plan is that it is increase the number of people with unlimited resources. At the end of the day, people do not really see the gain from those resources. And if we can just move to the issues which I think this presentation should focus more of its energy on. One is the management-related matters or leadership within the branch, not the department of the Department of Fisheries. had some challenges in filling the position after the configuration of cabinet, and basically since 2010, because the transfer officially happened in 2010. Yeah, since that time, there hasn't been a DDG steering the CRS branch. Most of the people who were there were acting on acting capacity. And then there was one time where a DDG was appointed, but the channels that they used were not within the prescribed. So eventually the post was left by him. And as I'm speaking to you, members, there's still officials acting on it. So it's now another them, and there's still the people acting on it. So it's one of the things that the committee needs to take up, because there's no one basically accountable for the activities in there. Because some of the things you find that there will be commitment made by one person who's acting. By the time when the committee does follow up on the commitment made, then you have another person acting, then it's that kind of situation where some may not know the commitment made by the previous one. And the position is regularly advertised, but it ends up without a DDG being appointed. And these are some of the things that are related to management and what other things that the committee may need to raise the issues from, but some of them have been raised by the Office of the Auditor General, particularly the violation of procurement processes. And also that the threat plans for the APPs of the department, you find that they will table a threat plan. But in terms for accounting or reporting comes, then targets have been changed, objectives have changed, some indicators have been removed, others said that then you are unable to assess whether there's real progress or not. So you find that at that time, when we have been dealing with annual reports, the threat plan does not become useful anymore because the directions have changed. Maybe the committee may also need to be supposed that they be regularly updated or informed when the department changes some of their priorities. And then there's the fishing rights allocation. Maybe if I can put a background on fishing rights allocation. It's not an overnight process. It takes it can take an extended period, years, to reach to a point where fishing rights are allocated to applicants. But it's supposed to be guided by indicators or the framework where everybody knows that as I have this fishing right, when it expires, this is what I will be assessed on. And should I find that I have not performed according to the requirements, then I then become facing a situation where it will be reissued or not reissued. So what has happened is that the department has to do the evaluation or performance reviews of the fishing rights or the rights holders to ensure that they are performing as expected, so that when time for evaluating them, they are not caught by surprise on what is assessed on them. But in this case, there is no statutory framework or a policy that states that, okay, when we do fishing rights, this is what has to happen before. That is guiding the department. There are indicators that are guiding or that fishers have to comply with, but there is no guidelines for the department itself. So which means the department can conduct the evaluation as and when they deal. And or what they decide. So all this, when it happens, it has to focus on those different fishery policies. For example, there needs to be an assessment of whether the department met the goals that they set for themselves. For example, if they say they want to transform in 2009-2010, the government did sent some questionnaires to the state of the fishery, and on that performance review questionnaire, there were various criteria and issues that were assessed. Some of those ones were on the admin side, which is the department assessing itself, where in terms of is it accessible, is it responding to people, the advocacy principles, all that. And there was also management related stuff, whether is the department doing efficient work in all these dealings, and also assessing the socio-economic development and other indicators which look at the officials, like whether are they investing in vessels, how many people are they employing, are they fishing, are they using their quotas or TACs and all those. And that report has not been tailed to the committee and has not been discussed. But there's some of the findings that the department itself has to commit to do and the others which the officials have to address. I think maybe there needs to be a day where the committee looks at that. So when we move to the process that of the 2013 fishing rights allocation, I can say that it started at a very late stage, and so I think it was March then, or this committee, or the previous committee has been raising relating to that, but the process was slow. And what actually happened is that some of the stakeholders and affected parties felt that they were excluded from the consultation process, which has to happen, especially when they review policies. And some of the ones they mentioned that they were not consulted. But I remember there was the draft policies were adopted, I think, around the 17th or the 22nd of April, and the consultation had already started on the 11th. So it meant that, the way I see it, it meant that there is a possibility that some people who saw the advert on the 22nd may have missed the consultation, which took place on the 11th of that month. But then the department said that no, the affected people had already been contacted, so which it may be viewed differently whether it was a proper consultation or not. But those are some of the things that were encountered during the consultation of the review process of the policies. And that was affecting 9 or 8 fisheries whose rights were expiring at the end of 2013, December. These are mainly the 8-year-long fishing rights, except for one, which was in the tuna industry, which was issued in 2004, which was a 10-year-long fishing right. So which meant that between 2005 and 2006, claim also the 8-year-long fishing rights were issued. Between that time and 2013, the department had to review the policies and make sure that there are processes in place so that when the rights expire, they are ready to issue them to the deserving or the qualifying applicants. But that did not happen eventually, because it had to go hand in hand eventually with the amendment of the Marine Living Resources Act. What the department had planned to do was so that when they allocate the fishing rights to the 8 affected sectors, they would also accommodate the small scale fishery sector. As I have mentioned in passing, the small scale fishery sector was not recognized in the legislation that governs marine fishery, which meant when those fishing rights were given in 2005 and 2006, that some communities were left out, not especially those who were in the small scale fishery sector. But what's happening by virtue of definition, there is subsistence and then there is artisanal fishery. The subsistence is those who fish purely to for their own consumption, then artisanal is those who fish for also sales purposes. But the legislation restricted sales, it meant that everybody was, if you were not big, then you had to be successful. subsistence fishing. Okay, they sell to those who have traditionally fished to sell to the community, not especially the, some of the coastal communities. Then eventually what happened is on that one, I'll talk to that one. Let me just finish up on the fishing rights allocation process. Then the process, in short, and had a lot of challenges in this way, and communication was also one of the problems, because most of the matters that related to the review process came out from the media. The department was not proactive, generally reactive. So, and some people got frustrated with the whole process. So, in December, the end of December, when people were supposed to be allocated rights, it meant that there are some people who, from the outcome, some people did not manage to get to the show those rights. And among those ones were those in the line fishery and also in other various sectors. Under normal circumstances, when fishing rights are allocated, there needs to be time allocated for appeals. And after those appeals, there needs to be time allocated for the department to review those appeals and respond timely before the start of the fishing season in the next cycle. But unfortunately, the outcomes were released on the 30th of December, which means if you look at the reality, the people had one day to lodge appeals and then have everything sorted before the beginning of the fishing cycle, which had to start in 1 January 2014. There's lots of things that did not go right here, but for the sake of time, members, the department was taken to court over exclusion, also the process which followed the fishing rights application and also issuing of rights. And the court judgment was that the department should accommodate those ones who have not, or there was an element of unfair treatment of those who did not qualify, because the fishing has to start before the review process or the appeals process was concluded. So it meant that some people, they had the right to go fishing while others are still waiting or undergoing that process. Then eventually, with the court proceedings, given that the process that was followed was not proper, the allocation and all its outcome had to be set aside, and the minister then scratched all the fishing rights process that happened, which means that people do not have, or the government somehow failed on its mandate of allocating fishing rights. So like now, people have to fish on the basis that the whole fishing rights process has to be done afresh. And there are cost implications to that in time and all that. So I think members may need to take this thing up with the department to ensure that the reallocation process of the eight sectors that have passed happens according to the book, where everybody knows what is expected of them. So like now, we don't really know whether people who are performing according to the regulations or the guidelines that they were expected to perform again, because seemingly from what is reported, some of the points that were supposed to be used for assessing the features were not followed, and some of the scores that were given were not accordingly. But to that effect, the then minister appointed a legal firm and legal expert to probe the whole process and ensure that everything took interest in fisheries, think we may need to come here so that we, the committee may know what are the commitments from the department in correcting the, whatever that they did not do or whatever that they did in the previous allocation. Maybe in putting this into perspective, some of those ones who were involved in the 2005-06 fishing rights allocation, they say the process may require about 2 to 3 years. And some of those ones are now in the Department of Environmental Affairs. So which means that 2 to 3 years is what we see as the time that allows every bit of process to go according to the book. But looking at time is not on the side of the department, because now there are other 8 fishing sectors which their rights are expiring next year, between June next year and December, which means what's happening is that from these 8 sectors, like the Netfish, Lush Pelagic, the 8 inshore trawl, and the inshore West Coast Rock Lobster, and the Horse Mackerel, all those ones. That process needs to be completed, for example, before the end of June next year. That is assessment of people who are applying, appeals process, and concluding the setting of TAC, total allowable catch, so that by the time those rights that are expiring in June, by the time of 1st July, people have their fishing permit and their fishing rights ready so that they can continue fishing. But looking at time, trying to avoid something like an alarmist, it's almost a year now left. There is a process that was supposed to conclude it in 2013. It has not been done. And the review of that process has not been initiated, to my knowledge, and from the communications from the department. So that process needs to be done. And then now we have this additional 8 sectors that have to have the those rights allocated before, I think it's one that expires in June, end of June next year, and the other expires at the end of December. When that happens, the committee, I think, has to play an active role, because there are people whose livelihoods depend on those rights being allocated on time. Because what it means is that if people are able to go fish, it means there's no food on the table and there's no income. So I think it's one of the things that a matter of agencies that the committee needs to take. Then there is another additional one on the side, which is the abalone sector. The abalone sector, those rights are expiring at the end of this month, and policies are not reviewed. We don't know whether people were complying or not, because policy review needs to happen. Whether the department decides to give rights or not, it has to happen so that it can also be assessed whether they achieved those goals that they needed to achieve or not. But given that the process takes time, it may mean that the department might not be considering this abalone sector as important, because I think there's about 100 people who, 103, yeah, there's about 103 people who are depending on this sector, and it's economically important sector. Although it's gradually getting replaced by aquaculture, more especially of abalone. So this one is mainly affected by the status of the resources, because they are not really sustainable due to high levels of poaching. So in terms of fishing rights allocation, this might end up something like a swamp, because I think the committee will need to have regular updates on this one. It's worth mentioning that the sector that is supposed to be allocated next year, they are high value sectors, and that also affect mostly the coastal communities that are food insecure. So I think that needs to be kept in mind when approaching the central agents of this matter. And so basically the department needs to come to this committee to brief it on the outcomes of that 2009-10 report, the review report on the status of the fishing, because given that everything was scrapped, it valid, then seemingly the nearest valid indicator or view for the data is from that report. And then, yeah, then basically we really need to be encouraged to develop a framework that will guide that in terms of fishing rights. So that maybe, for example, if a right has a duration of 10 years, then they know that on the 5th year or 6th year, they started the process in preparation for the expiry, so that everything will happen in a way everybody understands. And probably also the regular review to ensure that people, for those fish rights holders, perform. So yeah, I've mentioned today that the committee needed to call the department to brief it on that report that was commissioned by the minister. And then the other issue of consideration that was a bit of a thorny issue last year, where the fishing vessels and the patrol vessels. The department has two research vessels and four patrol vessels. It used to have three, but the other vessel has since been transferred to the Department of Environmental Affairs because it deals to some fisheries related or marine resource related research. But the way it was transferred, something else that was the benefit of the members. The committee was on oversight in September 2012, and where the committee was briefed that the department had three vessels and they were all at a banner town because they were not operational due to the state of being officially there. But as the committee was seated there, listening to the listing, then the people the vessels paid their way, while the committee was just told that no, the department had three vessels. And they had already reached an agreement that they would be transferring one of the vessels to the environment. So one may see it as the committee having been misled. But the matter is there are fishing vessels and there are patrol vessels. Patrol vessels are responsible for ensuring compliance with fishing regulations and the legislation. And the research vessels are mainly responsible for ensuring the sustainable use of the fisheries resources. And the department does not only rely on the one, has a number of radars and ski boats and also some devices that they use for patrol. But what happens is that sea-based operations rely on these vessels being operational. So the contract has been proposed for it and also many was handed over to two companies and to get the vessels operational again. So a number of those vessels are now operational, but I'm not sure whether all of them are operational. But what is in the case is that they spent most of the 2012-13 financial year not operational, so which meant that there were no patrols and the search was also disrupted. And these vessels are not only supposed to do that, they are also expected to, when they were bought, they had to assist in cases where there was oil spill, which means whenever there is an oil spill, these vessels should spring into action. But that has not been the case, because sometimes oil spill will take a little bit longer period, or to a point where sometimes a private vessel have to be hired, while these vessels are there. Maybe that can be clarified later by the department. Why is it that the case? And then the committee may need to have that briefing again. To understand some members may be new on the operation, more especially on monitoring, control, and surveillance, which affects the fishery. It's an obligation of the department that they do that, because if it's not done accordingly, or if these vessels are not operational, that threatens the industry, the fishing industry. For example, the egg sector, where it rely on the European, the American, and the oceanic regions, which are of the major importance of our fish, and that happens through the certification from marine stewardship council. So it things are not done according to, or if the department does not deliver on its mandate, that certification can be withdrawn, and it may mean that our fish may not access those markets. So that will affect your sustainability if it happens, but I think the department has what it takes to get this right. So in that issue, there was also a call here, and the way the vessel or the tender contract was awarded then in 2011, or was not awarded accordingly. And the Office of the Public Protector conducted the investigation, and the report was the prison or abstract of that report was presented last year, and the committee may need to discuss the full report, and so that some of the issues that were found in them, there can be some indication or commitment how the department intends to address those issues, and some of the people who were implicated in that report, and what has been done in the way forward. And briefly, I'll just talk to the sustainability of the fisheries. Given the various needs of the current needs of this fishery, the stocks themselves, the fish stocks, vary in terms of their long-term sustainability and the state where things are. And that is informed by the research that is done in the department. And some of the resources are collapsing, and other resources are stable while others are recovering. Among those that are collapsing or are in state of emergency that needs of agent attention, which the department is doing or trying to do, the inshore resources due to poaching and uncontrolled levels of harvesting of the way the stocks are harvested. Some of them are on the brink of extinction. For example, with the West Coast rock lobster, it's now at 3% of its pristine level. The pristine level is the level where the state, the stock can be sustained to harvested, and it's doing well, you can put it that way in the meantime. But now only the 3%, only 3% of the stocks are available. 97% is depleted. That's what it actually means. So from the 3%, the department may need to intensify efforts of arresting unregulated and illegal fishing on that resource. While at the same time there are some fisheries that are doing relatively okay, but they have untapped potential that the department may need. We can supply the members with more information on the rate of their resources in this I can supply that to his committee. But what is more important is compliance with the fishing laws, and more especially the recommendations that are given to the department. So there are a number of role players that are directly and indirectly involved in fisheries management. But what is more important in terms of the sustainability of the stock is compliance with those regulations and also guidelines, not only from the fishers, but also from the department. For example, if the scientists or the researchers, they mention that stocks make fishing need to be reduced, then that should be the case. And then we'll talk to the small scale fisheries. More especially, I'll focus more on the current issues with the implementation plan. I don't know whether I need to go through the background where it all comes from. Okay, the development in 2012 finalized the small scale fisheries policy, and that the implementation has not been developed, so the development may issue on the fund that finances the operations of the department, the Marine Living Resource Fund. And of course, its allocation keeps shrinking almost every financial year, and that might affect the operations. So some of the cost of the operations, but we'll talk to that one on Thursday. Then, one of the issues pertains to aquaculture, and that is now one of the priorities that the department has to focus on in growing. And there's some policies that, or there are policies and other incentives that develops to this effect to assist or create an environment where they can grow. So that one is to a certain extent driven by the department in establishing some of the HRAs, and in other instances it's driven by the private sector. But South African aquaculture has not been growing as fast as it's supposed to, and is not doing that well compared to other countries in Africa. So some countries are on the edge of overtaking us in some instances. For example, in terms of production, the country was on the top 5, but now almost among number 9, number 10 in the whole African continent. So there are also other areas, especially with infrastructure assistance, but in aquaculture that are carried out by the department and also the Department of Trade and Industry. And that process maybe they will be informative for the department to brief the committee on how far they've gone, whether they are progressing or not. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll then give the refresher. Unfortunately, you have only 10 minutes to do your work so that we have time for members to ask questions. Okay.
Good day, honorable members. My name is Montreal Suave. I'm a researcher for responsible agriculture. The earlier presentation that focused on most of the issues in the agriculture sector has cut all the what we have also focused on. But if the specific areas on which members need further information and clarification, I can provide that. So it's fine. I like the specific areas, but the presentation has kind of broadly all those issues, so I can clarify it.
Okay. So now I'll allow members to ask questions or clarification. So if you are ready, there you can. But
thank you. I mean, from the contact of ISA, I think it was quite the as she mentioned from the beginning that presentation is of a very high level, and as it was evident that, you know, it's very high, and it covered everything. It is a response to itself, but I think we as politicians now would want to come up with the political matters in the whole matter, which according to my observation, officials may be able to have some responses if they're politically requested to do so. Because The issue of the IGR appeared very slowly in the presentation, that there wasn't that IGR system application and the pledged real measurement of the system itself and so on. And my question there would be, did we in the meantime or in the middle have anything like a turnaround strategy? Because sometimes when you detect the problem in something, you are able to say it and really advise and understand how we can deal with it so that it does not continue up to the end or to the danger zone. So any of that kind of system. There was also a mention of the system of the partnership and whereby beneficiaries ended up not benefiting from the system. Now, I think that is what is real now. We know all that experience from our localities. We see it. I don't know if there's anywhere where there is no people there. But the problem is that it's been there for over up to 10 years now, that they have been with extension workers, they have been with mentors, they have been with this. And government has lost substantial amounts of money from the beginning of the things of mentoring and doing it. But they come continuously in every government, they come continuously now. What is happening there? Because we can't let things to come when we know that there's a problem. Then you, as people with the real intellectual capacity, what was your actual input around making sure that you have the ability to take proper decisions? Because when we talk to us, we need that, not to casually take decisions, we make it easy for us now. And that's what I'm trying to find. In fact, directly, let me say to you, that were the problems that actually makes you not to succeed in what you saw as a problem. You saw the problem, you know, you have detected it, it was fixed, and you are still there, but you continue. So maybe if you can be in a position to tell us what was actually the problem, what went wrong, maybe as a teacher. From the official point of view, we as a teacher, we will actually be able to find the political things that they are in. But now you, from the international point of view, you might be able to say, in anything that you have said, Mama, you will not go according to this one and this one. But if you can, this is where the problem and so on. Now, the other one is around the survey, who goes to that, said he's not satisfied about mentioning about traditional leaders and all small scale farmers. They are not mentioned as the center of the thing, and then they say many surveys in the country, gene coefficient surveys, they show that poverty is more in the rural where people own land. People own land, and there's a lot of poverty in the rural, but in all the plans of government, focus is the same event. They are improved, taken there. That might be the first according to you, so that we are able to give up the budget to say, can we let 60% of this budget now to own ourselves this policy if you would like to apply for it? You don't have to say the pattern of editing that number one is about the rules. The other thing is this one. There's a draft policy on the effectiveness of other systems except in there. I just want to know, was there any deadline in the draft policies? Maybe the draft policy on mentors, draft policy on support and so on. Was there any deadline? Because now, according what we see, they have been asked for so long, and they are on a deadline. Now, the most interesting one is this one, it was very clear in the presentation around the AU, the SADC, the Wawat. Also, do we have real content that we can talk about on the agreement side, or it's a process of starting on? Already existing agreements are there, and you are giving, they produce something for the country. The last one would be, what is the chief ingredient? I have already asked my wife, saying mother, tell us what are those 10 problems that can make us see all this, what we can see as challenges now, and we want to put in the NDP. The federal issue, because we must know now, the federal issue saying, how do we see this other partners coming in this whole thing? I will come to the last presentation. I think that's just okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. State. Honorable Mr. State,
Chair, I would like to thank our support staff for, I think, the discussion most of the real challenges that we had and that we are dealing with in the department. Chairperson, my question would be more on what the first presentation was about, the overview. And I remember the words, I think it was when I was on the land reform portfolio, it always sticks to my mind. There's one of the commercial farmers that always says, you cannot manage what you kind of measure. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we have in this department is there's so many things that we don't know. If you look at the first presentation, there are issues regarding small-scale fishes, small-scale farming, how many people of this and how many of that, and we don't know. And I think also that's why it's easy for the department when they come here with targets to every time change it, because we don't know what's the baseline. And I would really think, Chair, this for us must be a priority, that we put the department or someone to start to say we need to know actual facts. Because we cannot measure if the department is moving forward in ensuring food security if we don't even know where we are currently. Because I can remember even when SACSA was doing their presentation, they did a separate one for agriculture. I think it's important, my chairperson, because we never had it before, that we get SACSA here to come and present their agricultural stats. Because even they, when they did it, I think it's a farmers meeting when they can present that. And even then they said that there's massive gaps. And I want to give you an example. For instance, I can't remember what the actual figure was. Maybe the researchers will know. But the figure for subsistence farmers or small-scale farmers, 3 million or something like that. And even I think, even if you have 3 chickens, you will be qualified as a subsistence farmer. So I think we need to get to that point very quickly, that we actually get facts. Or we task the department or someone in government to help us so that we know where we're starting from. So for me, that is what came out of that first presentation. There's so many things that we don't know. And that's also why I think it makes it difficult for us to measure progress from the department. And maybe even the department itself. They can't measure if they're moving forward or backward because they don't know even where they started from. That's the first one. And then Chairperson, for me, the second one, and even on this, the presentation, something that always comes up in discussions here and also in discussions from the land reform portfolio is this thing of marginal land in the formal homeland area. I would really want us to look at that specifically, because information that I had, and I read research documents that was based on information during the 60s and 70s, it's that the land itself was not marginal land, but because of the overgrazing and the many people and population on the land, that it became, I would almost say, overgrazed and overutilized and overexposed. And there was a mention made by something, Mokzola, about mapping or the ARC. I think this is really important, because sometimes, Chairperson, I get the impression that people living on those lands think they can't plant there because they live on marginal land, and I don't think it's correct, because we keep on saying that, because we need that stats and information, so it's another thing that we are not sure about. And we need people maybe to come and do a presentation for us so that we know exactly where is marginal land, where is not, so that we can focus on that 1 million acres that needs to be planted, and so that we can see from the department side, are we concentrating on very good soils or not, and what can be done if it's bad or poor soils. And I want to make an example with Western Cape, with the wine growers. I think if you guys to the doers and you look at that bit of land and it's clipper, there is no land there. It looks like clipper, but they're producing wine and grapes and exporting. So I think we need to, for ourselves, get that thing of marginal land and good soils and what sort of land is good for what, and so that we get a proper understanding of that for the first thing. And then she was written on the second presentation on the fisheries. I think there's very good points in those dots, or I like the brackets where the committee needs to get a document, and I'm not going to mention them all, but they are all there. I think it's quite important that we do get all those documents. And my previous colleague, sorry, I don't know anyone's surname.
Jonas.
We need to get all those reports. It's not only even on the draft policy. There are so many policies for the Department of Agriculture that we've never seen. You can't even find them on the website. If I want to research certain policies from the department, I can't find it. And it was an issue that I was driving with the department in the past. Every time I come for the annual report or the that plan, I tell them. The website is a mess because I can't find policies there. And I think it is quite important that they do give us all these policies, even if they moan about it. We are doing oversight. And I know that the minister once made a joke when she was doing something and she said she asked someone in her department about Mafisa, and she said she didn't know Mafisa. The department didn't even know their own policies. But I think she has listened for me. That is the things that we can take from here, that we need to get as much information as possible so that we know where is the background that we're starting from. Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you. Honorable Mr. Humphrey.
So thank you very much, and many thanks to presenters all of them. I think we must be comfortable to have you. But surely you must do more. Must become part of the committee. Just to add on what needs to be done, I think it will be necessary. I think the committee of the court term did some work. Let's move from that case. Did a lot of work, and I think we must improve on what they have done. When you were presenting, you were saying this was not done, you know, and all that. It would be necessary to package all those issues for the committee, because we need to improve on what they've done. Package all that. Let's look at it, and therefore gallop in terms of implementation of those issues. You see, some of the things, the reason why some of the things were not done is exactly because of what you were saying, no management in the department. Well, they are the implementers. I mean, you can't have a right tool in a department top level. You can afford in lower levels, but not at the top level. No DG acting, DG acting, DG, this and that. I think we need to really improve on those ones. Just in the, maybe the details in terms of your presentation, Ms. Nkash. You said 640,000 employees. employees who must be very clear as to are those permanent. You know, farming, if some area that needs careful attention. My department was in my other term, was in an area where there is a lot of farming, apples, and stuff. But workers are seasonal. And you can't rely on that. Yes, you can, because it's statistics. But I think we really need to look at that, but also other temporal workers. Those statistics must be precise, so that we know in that particular sector so many workers and all of that. Because many other things have been raised. The other area of interest that I said is this area of the last Mr. Kinenda. In this area of subsistence fisher, they call them spenders. Some move must be made, because I know I've been working a very, very poor area called Storrows over here. Sometimes. I said one other day, they need to cross pay the toll gate to go and fish. And then the sea is such on the edge of there, the thing. But we are not that kind of commercial fishers and all that. But I think we have to find a way of dealing with that committee, so that we give them space to access fishing. Maybe as the things become clearer in this community, those issues will be handled properly. And some of us who were not here, we'll be very clear on them. But my point, in addition to us, is that let's as quick as possible, you know, the document package of what we have not done. And then we'll fast track this whole thing. We can't have policies. We can't have one of the members behind me was saying, website, nothing. I think we need to improve on those things so that people have access to information.
Thank you. Any other hand? Honorable.
Mare.
Hey, I'm coming from Limpopo. The question is a very difficult one.
No, I think 2 months is a very short one. I need to come with you from the first presenter when she was talking about this thing of 7,000 workers and 30,000 indirectly. 27,000 workers, there are some 100,000 indirect. I don't know whether those occasional workers, and they have this other number, the fixed number, is permanent staff. If that's so, why others, so huge number of about 100,000 people, maybe occasional workers, are kind of a job that is. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any other? Okay, I think.
I think let me just finish this one. I think in the package that she was talking about, I think it can also have an indication of this outstanding, that they mentioned very key level of some of legislation in teaching things for us. Well, if you can press on those that are leaking in society, you just hit them from there.
Okay.
Something that I forgot about in legislation. I just wanted to find out if there's any legislation from fisheries or forestry that was not changed or that needed to be changed when we integrated those two into this department, because there might be outstanding pieces of legislation for forestry and fisheries because of the integration into this department. I remember at one stage that I wasn't sort of persons in this book when I started on land reform. So maybe, but there was a piece of legislation as far as I know, that sometimes it needs to change the wording in old legislation or something, I don't know what you call it, but you get a piece of legislation to change the names in previous pieces of legislation, something like that.
Okay, let me join members for welcoming the presentation. Indeed, it was very informative. And as members, I think we are even ready to meet with the department. So thank you very much, our support team. But I think, like issues of policies, they were mentioned a lot of gaps in terms of policies. But I get worried, like your facial palette was launched by the president. I don't think there is no policy. It cannot just be. So I'm just saying that we just need to get department to give us relevant documents. Besides, I think in their next presentation, as they are coming, we must remind them all those outstanding policy documents and legislation that they're supposed to finish this commission. The other issue that you have not touched was on the water rights for small farmers, because it's a problem. And you would not reach all those obligations from UN and your NDP without addressing that. So I'm not sure maybe if we can have any information what has been happening around that. The issue of land bank reading from the newspaper has been a problem, and I'm not sure whether is it the problem has been resolved, because for us to be able to transform the sector, you need funding for the small sectors to grow up. But if you and there are a lot of resource support located in various departments, but because of the NGR witnesses that you have identified, you are not able to get small farmers assisted. For which we just need to, from our level, interacting with various committees that we feel are important, particularly rural development, land and rural development. They've got, as you said, agricultural projects, but again, they've got responsibility to restitute and redistribute the land. And in that, in their programs, obviously we must know where the culture fit in, where they end. Because coming from Limpopo, most of the restituted land is not used. Where it's used, community fighting for resources. So if we can get, if we can work on this intergovernmental relation, I think it will be very helpful. And issues of transformation, departments must be able to identify those issues. We don't just have to claim that they're supposed to do this. They must tell us what are the transformational issues, so that as members, we know what we monitor as we engage with the department. I think those from my input, and the most important thing, it will be how we make sure that the department align its strategic plan and APP to the policy imperative that has been announced by the UN, the NDP, the President Sona, and all those other things. So those are the things that I think people can get support from our support team to make sure that we make them to do the right thing. lastly, it's on the data base. I agree that you would not be able to assess your progress if there is no data in the department. Even the support that are given to provinces, it's not even guided. There's no framework. So if we can get the department to do that, because, and as a committee, I think one of the things that we might need to do is to assist department to get the provinces to account. Because lots of conditional grants are not being spent. In the provinces, the claim is the condition of those grants as they come to provinces. But at the same time, it's the service delivery that is suffering. I think moving forward, if there is a need for us to call provinces to come and account, we should do that. Because for us to achieve the federal, you name them all, implementers are provinces, in fact. Those are the people who must make things to happen on the ground. So we need to make sure that we assist departments to get provinces to do their work. Yeah, I think those are my inputs. Maybe let's get yourselves to respond to all the issues that members have raised. And you can start the research.
I think the most important thing for the department is to start in-house. There's a lot of resources, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of the tools that they have that they could use to have all the higher impact on the ground in terms of their delivery. For instance, if you look, they have one of the agricultural research institutes programs. They've developed a tool that could be easily used by extension officers in terms of planning, in terms of the profile of land, water requirements, what would be the best crops that you can use in a particular area. Those reports are made, but we're not seeing them on the ground. They're not affecting any emerging small-scale farmers, but the tools are there. The scientists, the people who are working day in, day out, produce all of this wonderful information, but it's not affecting anyone. So I think some of the things, it's not in the matter of the department looking outside for private partners or you know, even more money from state. But I think we're already there that we should be putting to better use, and I think that's important. Again, using the same example of this, it's got an ICT tool, this computer-based, but you would find even private sector companies that are using the very same technology developed by the state. So the state puts in a lot of money into research and developing of certain instruments, but at the end of the day, they're never used by people for profit. And farmers on the ground who are under-resourced do not have access to those things. So I think, you know, there's a lot that the department can push to. It's already there, they're doing it, but to coordinate that and to streamline it and to make sure that there's better and higher impact on the ground. Another example that you can use, for instance, even managing animal diseases in the country. Already there's OBD on the support of biological products, which is a public company. And a lot of work that happens there. I know National Trade has approved a bunch to you know, refurbish the infrastructure there. There's a lot of work. It's very highly scientific work that could put our livestock industry, you know, at par with international competitors. But that is not quite. But I always say that one is, you know, underdeveloped, the development stage, higher and improved things. But it's not necessarily even to look outside. There's so much that's there, but if it's better coordinated, if it's better streamlined to what the actual needs of the African agriculture industry are, what those needs are, and what the department is doing to better have, you know, as those farmers, particularly agricultural farmers. I think that's an important aspect. In terms of the numbers, yes, I was saying that the numbers do vary in terms of what they have for the different small scale, emerging, and so forth. But I think you can work within certain estimates that are more or less reliable. For subsistence, for instance, you know, between 2.6 and 3 million households are involved in subsistence agriculture. And that's quite true. But at the same time, you don't see in the plan of the department, we would assume that's the demand that they have for their services in terms of subsistence farming. But you would find that the department plans to assist maybe, let's say, 400,000 subsistence farms. So now, what do you need of the 2 million plants that are left outside the normal course? But I think that also needs to go to better manage from the department side. And the other thing that has been lacking particularly for the department is, even though they're planning, you don't just say that the kind of programs and services or services that are available to for to say subsistence farmer, you don't see how that connects to taking a subsistence farmer, giving them support, assistance, holding them by the hand to move to a small scale farmer. And when you're a small scale farmer, we expect to give you support for another 3 years, and by then you should see, you know, participating in a commercial space. It might be still at a smaller scale as a new entrance into the commercial space, but you don't get the sense that that's the vision, that's what you're trying to develop here. There's a lot of work, there's officials that, you know, are working, possibly because people are working inside. So if I'm responsible for a director that looks at subsistence farmers, that's all I'm going to do. When a subsistence farmer is now ready to, you know, venture into slightly bigger scale or what, that doesn't seem to always translate. And I don't think that's the overall vision that you know, the NDP, for instance, pushes forward. We want to lift people out of poverty. And that's the other thing, the very important thing of the agriculture sector is it can easily do that. Mm-hmm. Agriculture has the ability to lift people out of poverty and also to, you know, contribute to even higher growth in other sectors. But the way it's kind of, I think it's just a matter of the perspective of how we implement the program. It's not the programs themselves. There's nothing wrong with that. CAST is perfectly fine as a program. But how we implement it and what we try to achieve out of that program, it's quite, it still needs a little bit more, enthusiasm from the department, I should say. Because, for instance, the CAST example again, if you look at this in March, the financial state has spent over probably 1 billion rand on CAST itself. But if you look on the ground and the impact that it actually has, how many subsistence farmers or small-scale farmers have been lifted into commercial status? You don't get that. But it's not CAST itself that's the problem, but how we implement this program. I think that's the issue that the department grapples with. But once staff probably, the implementing staff on the ground, if they don't understand how some of these things impact on the overall objectives of the NDP, then maybe that's why people don't put as much work into, you know, holding farmer by the hand, making sure that they move from year one to year three, you can see like there's been that much of difference. But the other problem, in as much as the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation is trying to look at CAST and MAFISA particularly, part of the problem is people who receive funds in 2004, for instance, you come back in 2014, the people are not safe. Mm. So someone has given a farming to go take up a job as a domestic worker, for instance. Mm. And so the state will potentially spend money to lift the 3 million subsistence farmers, but you will not have an impact on that. But I think the vision that we have of the sector and how we implement some of these programs is we should start to see impact. It shouldn't be perpetual. I mean, we're putting in money, we have a program, but we have no results. But I think that's quite important on the side of the problem. In terms of the draft legislation, we also know that the legislation has been under review since 2009, and we believe that the parties that are contracted to assist the department, technical experts who are contracted to assist the department, and we should be, I know that the department has not taken their plan before the committee, but I think we should be able to start seeing some of that legislation come back to the committee to say, these are the areas that we want to work. I mean, we know the problem is the issue of archaic or
thousand pages to certain areas. And that I think, yeah, some of the draft bills should be coming for this committee. There's also the minister to respond to the forestry one. I know the National Forest Amendment Bill that should be come to this committee by tentatively. Sometimes, yeah, it should be coming through, but that might happen. We'll have to find out what the department is from when they're getting to table certain people of legislation before Parliament. In terms of the SADC and the AU, equipment and admin, I mean, you didn't live over the state of the nation, I think, because of itself, reiterated the thing of the issue of regional integration and how we move towards more trade agreements. I think the plan to have SADC, the Eastern Bloc, and I think somewhere towards the north, develop the regional corridor so that we can trade with the rest of the continent. And I mean, I think Dr. La briefly mentioned on the issue of pressure points. It has slowly become more and more difficult to access the European market for our farmers, particularly with emerging farmers, for instance, in terms of product quality and consumer preferences of those markets. Our farmers might not be able to meet those requirements. But if you could be expanding, new frontiers into African continent in terms of markets that are available, then that means that there's an outlet for their produce, and that's what we need. So in an instance where it's more fair farming are producing, but if there's no off-take agreement, if there's no supplier or market that is willing to take off their produce, then they end up with it on the side of the road selling to the local community. And not a bad thing in itself, that means the farmer is limited in terms of how much he should be planning to produce if he has no access to market. So that should be a very important thing that in the sector itself, the department plans along with, so this is a national priority, to integrate Alaska, SADC with the rest of the continent. But the department should also be putting in place its own plans, in how our farmers could benefit from such development. And by then, even the issue of the cattle complex, I think with Chris was in now, and it seems the department is moving, however slowly they're moving on that issue. But, I mean, with signing the kind of compact in itself, it also addresses the issue of those PPPs, because it comes as a framework in terms of how you plan your investments into the sector. So now, already if you sign the kind of compact, it means the financial government would be committing itself to, for instance, let's say the South African government is committing itself to spending more on R&D in sector research and development, but it means at the same time you have private partners who are committing themselves to growing the sector as well. So that framework itself would assist in many ways, but I believe that the department is moving in a positive direction. Also the issue of the 1 million hectares that are to be brought into production as a big amount. It's a welcome initiative, and it should be great. But I think, again, the issue of water availability might be a problem. Agriculture already consumes 65% of the water we have in the country. And with the energy demands of South Africa and moving to fracking in the Karoo, fracking itself will have huge water demand implications. And so there'll be those competing issues, but I think, on a much higher level, those competing demands would have to be balanced to some extent. I know that under water sanitation, they're also looking at establishing a body that will be issuing water licenses. And what the Department of Mineral Resources has done effectively is, when you apply for mineral rights, you apply simultaneously for water. So, you don't have to get your mining license and then you sit for 3 months and you're waiting for water license. But with us, in terms of agriculture, I mean, it would happen even under a lot of land reform people. The land has been transferred to the new owner, but the person who holds rights to the water on the farm is a previous owner, and that has not changed, and that transfer has not happened. So maybe looking at better managing even that process, particularly for land reform farms, or even, land in the communal areas, how
when you bring in assistance in terms of whether it's the funding, whether it's the technical support, but you also, you know, make sure that some of these bases are covered, particularly for the water, but it will be a problem. And given the climate change perspective, particularly on the water issue, it's likely to become quite a difficult issue to try and manage. But also there's innovation, there's research into even drought tolerance crops, for instance, or crops that will try and find its water. There's hydroponics, for instance, but I don't think that's been taken into the African context, but there's ways to try and manage the water situation, but it does need to be managed. And I don't think there's any particular program from the department that specifically tries to look at that. I'm not quite sure. It's the issue of that 1 million liters for food security, and then that issue of the comparative advantages. So what are we growing? What are the most ideal crops to be growing or in life in terms of livestock? Or what is the ideal situation? Because you do not want to, even for, it's not just a farm labor. A farmer could not be producing 20 different things all at the same time. But the minute you they start to grow and to develop, if you focus your farmers into crops that are growing quite well in the areas that they are in, there's markets, and they are setting relatively new profitable prices for their produce, then we'll build on that. And before you know it, I mean, there's an example of the maize triangle, for instance. So you start building on those comparative advantages. Say, in this area, you don't grow maize and you grow quite well, and the yields that you have are so high. And it becomes even easier for farmers to survive if it's how you plan your genetics or your intervention. Because you know you're not going to see how that X who's got 2 times of this, quite hard, 2 times of maize, but you're going to see 18 farmers and together they have 300 tons of maize. So at least you can plan your income slightly better, but we've got to build around the issues of competitive advantages and what are we planting, what are we growing, what would yield better, not only in terms of the crops themselves, but you know, for the socio-economic benefits that flows from us, because I think at the end of the day, you want to improve life. That's the whole point. People's lives should be improved. And I think, my colleague can, again on the water rights issue, I know NDP also plans that 500,000 extra hectares should be under irrigation by 2030. So the work should be done, right? It's important to move the sector forward, but it has to be managed quite well. South Africa is a just-class country, but that's the issue. On the last part, in terms of the financial support that's available, again, I think the department needs to look inwards before we ask for more money, or before we look at so they have an agricultural budget that they're not an agricultural department. Because we know, I think the Agri-B fund was launched in 2008, 2009. When was it launched? 2007, but there was a time when it was launched in operation, and started again in 2008 or 2009. And subsequently, those funds have been returned to Treasury, because year in, year out, those funds are not displaced. That money was meant to, assist people who are trying to get for transformation purposes. The sector, either through investing or starting new businesses and all of that, but that money has been turned to treasury. So, as one further needs to just streamline what it is that they are doing, coordinate it slightly better. And it's become easier in that case to say, these are the tiny producers that I have, I'm assisted them, they're producing so much, and whether they're pushing DCR, go to assist them with access to market and all of that. I think it's done.
I think I'll be going backwards. Some of the members were statements, not necessarily questions. And I'll start with Mr. Chumans. There was a question on the content of agreement, for example. we can make the actual document available. For example, the Maputo Declaration from Member 16, but it really states what it requires from the member countries that signed. And I can also avail the brief that I made on the Comprehensive Africa Professional Development Plan, the CADEP, specifically what it's all about and what are the main issues and the pillars of focus. The package involves all issues that are observing from the host parliament that will be provided as well. That will be policies and certain issues and legislation and categorized into that order. Just to add on the water rights issue is in terms of innovation, my colleague has mentioned all those opportunities that are there, and one other thing that that I think is not addressed is water harvesting, and this one with the availability of treasure tanks that can work for urban areas as well. And on the land bank issue, that's a big one. I'm glad that you raised it. Because we have that historically land bank used to report directly to agriculture. But because of some maladministration and mismanagement of the agri-BEE fund and other funds that were residing within land bank, a decision was which involved a court case, and the decision was taken in July 2008 through a presidential proclamation to transfer land banks from agriculture to national treasure. So currently, land bank, although it's responsible for agriculture functions and mandates, it still resides with national treasure, and the last committee has been struggling to have the land bank coming before the committee for voting. And so when the committee did invite land bank, they had to first write to the Minister of Finance to get permission and all that. But eventually, not as frequently as the committee wanted them to come, they did come before the committee. And they also suggested that the committee can line up with the standing committee on finance, because that's the committee that oversees them. And when they do proceed on that standing committee, then our portfolio committee can join the have a joint session. But the standing committee will largely focus on finance issues, and in agriculture we want on service delivery issues pertaining to agriculture, including transformation of the sector through the Agri-BEE Fund. That's where we are standing currently, and I believe even on this budget vote there is some transfer to the land bank that they don't report to the Minister of Agriculture. So I believe this year again we will check with the standing committee when the land bank goes to that committee and probably have a joint meeting. And also just to remind members, the land bank, the farm, that the land bank provides loans against discounted interest rates and also manages the agri-BEE fund. So it's commercially oriented, but for previous advantaged farmers. So how it does things is different from the other grants. So, and that's what, as I mentioned in conclusion about the commercialization part. So what Land Bank has been doing through its turnaround strategy in the last few years is to try to professionalize the process and the kind of, to ensure that the people that they assist have the potential to succeed, rather than investing on projects that already show signs that they won't succeed. And there was also, forgot the right time, but there were those land reform farming entities that were failing the bailout, kind of, so they were also involved in the bailout also. So they had to do an assessment first to ensure the viability of the business before they fund it. so that the previous tenure was held back. In terms of legislation amendments that were related to the amalgamation of the two other sectors of agriculture, there was land for forestry. But in terms of fisheries, there were some amendments to the MLRA, and it was last year or 2 years ago. But there is still a problem there, because the marine living resources is administered by the Department of Environmental Affairs. Agriculture is governed by certain sections that were specified in the proclamation. And when the Act was amended again to accommodate small scale fisheries, there are those small issues like when the Act says the department is responsible for this, blah, blah, blah. So in relation to the MLRA, the department refers to the Department of Environmental Affairs. And that section, I don't have the specific number for the section that we were responsible for the amendment to accommodate the small scale sector. It's the department there still refers to environmental affairs instead of agriculture. So that we might experience a challenge in terms of implementation of that amendment. So it's something that we can look up to or even ask about the implications through the legal services. So that's something that I read about on that the committee during the amendment. And on the question of sustain on marginal land, when we talk about marginal land, it's not specifically about soil quality per se, but it's also about the production potential and opportunities in the area. When we talk about historically, with the removals, when people were forced into their homelands and marginal land, those were high numbers of people and large populations with high numbers of livestock in a small area. It might have good soil, but if there's no water, there's no infrastructure, that's marginal in terms of agricultural production. In some cases, degradation has been the result of those high populations and lack of management in terms of grazing land. For example, we don't have a national range and forage management to sustain the country. There was a policy, but it has not been implemented. I guess that's one of those things that we have to figure out. As we package issues for COVID. And also on this issue, that's where the spatial analysis will assist. It was initiated in 2012, but the department in the last strategic plan didn't report on it, and also in the annual report, which is one of the things that happened, where this year they will report on a program that they are initiating, and then the following year it just falls out of the program and there's no explanation on what happened or where the process is. So the spatial analysis will assist on currently what is there and where is the potential. An area might be marginal, for example, for meat production, but it might be good enough for sheep production. So those intricacies can be easily outlined through the spatial analysis. Transport deadlines. Honorable, you speak about deadlines. Some draft commissions have deadlines, and some, because they are still in process, the department doesn't necessarily give a deadline. It might say 2014-15, but not the quarter or the month. On the issue that Chief Madera also raised with me regarding smallholder or small-scale producers in traditional or in communal areas, I think this is one of the things, I think I almost annoyed the committee or the department through the committee with its weak definitions. They might be pissed for some people, but I felt that we needed also to assist with interventions. As a country, we needed a clear definition of what a smallholder producer or farmer is, because there are different categories. Is it the mother with two cattle and one sheep, or the neighbor with 30 cattle? And in a communal setting, in a village, they might be a household with five livestock or no livestock, but a field, a 10 hectare field, for example, that they are working on. At the same time, there might be neighbors with more than 100 cattle. It's a reality today. So where do you categorize those people? Well, there might be someone in a small holding, not in a communal setting, with even fewer lives or fewer resources to make use of the field. And also subsistence. So there's a strength between smallholder and subsistence. There are cases where people will be producing for subsistence. But if it's a good year, it may still happen that they have a lot of paper that they will have to sell. Or from that experience, they decide that they can go big the following year. And how do you put those people in terms of definition? I know in other African countries, the so-called definition is based on land, the access, or the amount of land that people own. And so when you mention in this context, because the emphasis is still on rural development. So whether those people are in farming areas in the Western Cape, like farm workers, or communal people under a traditional authority, and they are also understanding the fact that there are also communal communities that are not under traditional authority, but a lot of community. Municipality, for example, and also in semi-urban areas or in townships, there are people with livestock. There are people that are involved in some agricultural activities using the municipal community. Where do you place those people? So that's one of the things that we can stress and raise in this definition, the categories, the definitions or the categories of smallholder producer. In terms of strategic partnerships, I don't remember the actual questions there.
Yeah, no.
Oh, mentorship. Oh, I remember. Sorry. I think the question was how those can be better handled. I think it was along those lines. Because there are some that are working, there are some that are not working. I think this goes back to the capacity within the department. If I have no knowledge of crop production, and I am lay on crop production, my background is livestock production, so I don't think it should be easy for me to draw up a contract if I'm responsible for a group of beneficiaries that are supposed to be assisted by strategic partner A. The contract must for me to be able to draw that contract, I must know a little or a lot more about the business of crop production, so that I know how long it takes, for example, if it's the business is on avocado, how long it takes, what is the lifespan of the avocado trees, and what kind of skills are the beneficiaries, should the beneficiaries acquire to be able to run that business on their own, and also the amount or the duration that it will take to get those beneficiaries at that level. So those details should be explicit on the contract. And some of the contracts are open-ended, or like 15, 20 years, and in a fruit or nut or tree nut enterprises. And when it comes to with my little knowledge of the crop production sector, but I know when it comes to fruit or even nuts, they have a certain lifespan. it might be 15 or 20 years. So if the contract is for the strategic partner to operate on this farm that we have acquired through land reform for 20 years, by the time the strategic partner contract expires, then the production potential of that farm has already gone down. It's even worse if I haven't acquired the skills. So it's those kind of details and those contracting that I think we're lacking. With mentorship, I think in some cases the department is just happy to have someone holding them, the beneficiaries by hand. But instead of doing the actual hand holding, the beneficiaries, the mentors or strategic partners, because in some cases we find that the mentor strategic partner is the biggest owner of the farm. So they run business as usual without really transferring the skills to the beneficiaries. And linked to those contracts, there has to be a monitoring and evaluation plan. In cases of where the committee has had oversight of this partnership, you'll find that the beneficiaries know nothing about the business. They don't even know how much the business makes in a year or a quarter. They're just happy with whatever portion is given to them when profits are realized. And so we felt that the department also needs departments, not just agriculture, strengthen the monitoring and evaluation of those contracts of partnership. On intergovernmental relations, it's a government-wide issue, and it's through an act of parliament. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the act itself is administered by COTA, the Department of Cooperative Governance. Mm. So if IGR is not working, that means COFTA is not doing its work in terms of monitoring the evaluation of the Act. And if there needs to be amendments to the Act, that's also an option to re-specify at the higher level that, for example, rural development is a priority. And Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform, Public Works, Water and other, you have a responsibility to ensure that this priority is achieved and met. Department A, this is a responsibility that one. In terms of resource allocation, rural development, this is specifically your allocation, and you don't struggle to the agricultural menu, and also have timelines on those. It's like in the IPEC, because in the IPEC they have those, although it's not about resource allocation, but they have specific responsibilities for each department and area. And also, Parliament has still played a role in the legacy report. I think there are some achievements that we've mentioned that the committee achieved through working with other parliamentary committees. As the chair has already mentioned, rural development is one of those partner committees that we have to work in closely with, and so is the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources, amongst others. So I think, notwithstanding the role of COCTA in implementing the Act, as parliamentary committees, we can also just, with coordination among ourselves, force the departments to work together. I think, there was a specific question on employment statistics. On the categorization in terms of whether permanent contract and seasonal, I think that can be arranged. SA might have that kind of information. It's a matter of utilizing with them and for assistance, if not to them. I'm sure there are resource people within the agents that can assist with those. In terms of employment statistics, we, for example, said fisheries. 27 current direct employees, but the permanent in the fishing sector industry. And then the indirect, the plus minus 100,000 indirect, so that's the value chain. Anything that involves fisheries, that means the shipping, supply chain, regulation or processing. On those issues, and some of those are not necessarily permanent. They might be contract or even seasonal in terms of agriculture. I think we've covered all the questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. I don't know whether there's anyone who wants to take your bike again just for follow up. But I can see that you are busy fine. Okay. Honorable member?
Chair, no, it's not even a question. I'm saying if only that we are in the same understanding with our chair on what Honorable Humphrey was saying to us. Now, concretely, it is our attention that this issue of the caps, either in human resource, in education, and everywhere, is actually now what we can see as, and the research of it is quite clear, that is exactly what we can see as a problem that has come up the smooth value of this pattern. So I think with such less qualitative approach that we have, I just wanted to say if that is the understanding with.
Okay. Honorable Say.
It's Jefferson, and just for the benefit of the other colleagues, I've also said in the past, and I think it came out of the answers now. The way I could see this department is that it was more focused on spending the budget than actually achieving anything with that. And I think that's what we need to get right. They can report to us every week on how much they spent, but not what was the outcome. If we can just change that, it would make a huge difference.
Okay, I think that is very much important. Members, you have been given strategic plans for the entity and the department. I think even if we are going to get the analysis from the researchers, let's go through them so that as we are going to have the analysis from the researcher and the content advisor, then we are able to ready ourselves to meet with the department. Because one of the things that you observe, particularly with the Fishing Act, the Fish Marine Act, you see that after the relocation of the function, Department of Agriculture was supposed to develop policy. Then they just sit back and rely on implementing the Marine Act based on environmental part, not on what they are supposed to do. I think the integration, as has been mentioned by the other colleague, is very much important. I agree with your sentiment that we should not be impressed that they spend the budget but we don't see the outcome. So that's our task, and we should make them to account and give us a better feedback for the sake of our people. Thank you very much. Any announcements? Yeah? Your announcement. You want
yeah.
To
No. Just to revert the three of us to remain.
Okay.
Just for a few minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Any announcement from your side? Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you.